Listening Library presents The 101 Dalmatians by Dodie Smith. Read for you by Martin Jarvis.
Not long ago, there lived in London a young married couple of Dalmatian dogs named Pongo and Mrs. Pongo. Mrs. had added Pongo's name to her own on their marriage, but was still called Mrs. by most people. They were lucky enough to own a young married couple of humans named Mr. and Mrs. Dearly, who were gentle, obedient, and unusually intelligent, almost canine at times. They understood quite a number of barks. The barks for out, please, in, please, hurry up with my dinner, and what about a walk? And even when they could not understand, they could often guess, if looked at soulfully or scratched by an eager paw. Like many other much-loved humans, they believed that they owned their dogs, instead of realizing that their dogs owned them. Pongo and Mrs. found this touching and amusing, and let their pets think it was true. Mr. Dearly, who had an office in the city, was particularly good at arithmetic. Many people called him a wizard of finance, which is not the same thing as a wizard of magic, though sometimes fairly similar. At the time when this story starts, he was rather unusually rich for a rather unusual reason. He had done the government a great service, with something to do with getting rid of the national debt, and as a reward, had been let off his income tax for life. Also, the government had lent him a small house on the outer circle of Regent's Park, just the right house for a man with a wife and dogs. Before their marriages, Mr. Dearly and Pongo had lived in a bachelor flat, where they were looked after by Mr. Dearly's old nurse, Nanny Butler. Mrs. Dearly and Mrs. had also lived in a bachelor flat. There are no such things as spinster flats, where they were looked after by Mrs. Dearly's old nurse, Nanny Cook. The dogs and their pets met at the same time and shared a wonderfully happy double engagement, but they were all a little worried about what was to happen to Nanny Cook and Nanny Butler. It would be all right when the Dearlys started a family, particularly if it could be twins, with one twin for each nanny. But until then, what were the nannies going to do? For though they could cook breakfast and provide meals on trays, meals called a nice egg by the fire, neither of them was capable of running a smart little house in Regent's Park, where the Dearlys hoped to invite their friends to dinner. And then something happened. Nanny Cook and Nanny Butler met, and after a few minutes of deep suspicion, took a great liking to each other. And they had a good laugh about their names. "What a pity we're not a real cook and butler," said Nanny Cook. "Yes, that's what's needed now," said Nanny Butler. And then they both together had the great idea. Nanny Cook would train to be a real cook, and Nanny Butler would train to be a real butler. They would start the very next day and be fully trained by the wedding. "But you'll have to be a parlour maid, really," said Nanny Cook.
"Certainly not," said Nanny Butler. "I haven't the figure for it. I shall be a real butler, and I shall valet Mr. Dearly, which will need no training, as I've done it since the day he was born."
And so, when the Dearlys and the Pongos got back from their joint honeymoon, there were Nanny Cook and Nanny Butler, fully trained, ready to welcome them into the little house facing Regent's Park. It came as something of a shock that Nanny Butler was wearing trousers. "Wouldn't a black dress with a nice frilly apron be better?" suggested Mrs. Dearly, rather nervously, because Nanny Butler had never been her nanny.
"You can't be a butler without trousers," said Nanny Butler firmly, "but I'll get a frilly apron tomorrow. It will add a note of originality."
It did. The nannies said they no longer expected to be called Nanny, and were now prepared to be called by their surnames in the correct way. But though you can call a cook cook, the one thing you cannot call a butler is butler. So in the end, both nannies were just called Nanny Darling, as they always had been. After the dogs and the Dearlys had been back from their honeymoons for several happy weeks, something even happier happened. Mrs. Dearly took Pongo and Mrs. across the park to St. John's Wood, where they called on their good friend, the splendid veterinary surgeon. She came back with the wonderful news that the Pongos were shortly to become parents. Puppies were due in a month. The nannies gave Mrs. a big lunch to keep her strength up, and Pongo a big lunch in case he should feel neglected, as the fathers of expected puppies sometimes do. And then both dogs had a long afternoon nap on the best sofa. By the time Mr. Dearly came home from business, they were wide awake and asking for a walk. "Let us all go for a walk to celebrate," said Mr. Dearly, after hearing the good news. Nanny Cook said the dinner was well ahead, and Nanny Butler said she could do with a bit of exercise, so off they all set along the outer circle. The Dearlys led the way, Mrs. Dearly very pretty in the green going-away suit from her trousseau, and Mr. Dearly in his old tweed jacket, which was known as his dog walker. Mr. Dearly wasn't exactly handsome, but he had the kind of face you don't get tired of. Then came the Pongos, looking noble. They could both have become champions if Mr. Dearly had not felt that dog shows would bore them and him. They had splendid heads, fine shoulders, strong legs, and straight tails. The spots on their bodies were jet black, and mostly the size of a 2-shilling piece. They had smaller spots on their heads, legs, and tails. Their noses and eye rims were black. Mrs. had a most winning expression. Pongo, though a dog born to command, had a twinkle in his eye. They walked side by side with great dignity, only putting the Dearlys on the leash to lead them over crossings. Nanny Cook, plump in her white overall, and Nanny Butler, plumper, in a well-cut tailcoat and trousers plus dainty apron, completed the procession. It was a beautiful September evening, windless, very peaceful. The park and the old cream-painted houses facing it basked in the golden light of sunset. There were many sounds, but no noises. The cries of playing children and the whir of London's traffic seemed quieter than usual, as if softened by the evening's gentleness. Birds were singing their last song of the day, and further along the circle, at the house where a great composer lived, someone was playing the piano. "I shall always remember this happy walk," said Mr. Dearly. At that moment, the peace was shattered by an extremely strident motor horn. A large car was coming towards them. It drew up at a big house just ahead of them, and a tall woman came out onto the front door steps. She was wearing a tight-fitting emerald satin dress, several ropes of rubies, and an absolutely simple white mink cloak, which reached to the high heels of her ruby-red shoes. She had a dark skin, black eyes with a tinge of red in them, and a very pointed nose. Her hair was parted severely down the middle, and one half of it was black, and the other white. Rather unusual.
"Why, that's Cruella de Vil," said Mrs. Dearly. "We were at school together. She was expelled for drinking ink."
"Isn't she a bit showy?" said Mr. Dearly, and would have turned back. But the tall woman had seen Mrs. Dearly and come down the steps to meet her. So Mrs. Dearly had to introduce Mr. Dearly.
"Come in and meet my husband," said the tall woman.
"But you were going out,"
said Mrs. Dearly, looking at the chauffeur who was waiting at the open door of the large car. It was painted black and white in stripes, rather noticeable.
"No hurry at all. I insist on your coming."
The nannies said they would get back and see about dinner and take the dogs with them. But the tall woman said the dogs must come in too.
"They're so beautiful. I want my husband to see them," she said.
"What is your married name, Cruella?"
asked Mrs. Dearly, as they walked through a green marble hall into a red marble drawing room.
"My name is still Deville," said Cruella. "I am the last of my family, so I made my husband change his name to mine."
Just then, the absolutely simple white mink cloak slipped from her shoulders to the floor. Mr. Dearly picked it up.
"What a beautiful cloak," he said. "But you'll find it too warm for this evening."
"I never find anything too warm," said Cruella. "I wear furs all the year round. I sleep between ermine sheets."
"How nice,"
said Mrs. Dearley politely.
Do they wash well?
Cruella did not seem to hear this. She went on,
I worship furs. I live for furs. That's why I married a furrier.
Then Mr. Deville came in. He was a small, worried-looking man who didn't seem to be anything besides a furrier. Cruella introduced him and then said,
Where are those two delightful dogs?
Pongo and Mrs. were sitting under the grand piano, feeling hungry. The red marble walls had made them think of slabs of raw meat.
They're expecting puppies, said Mrs. Dearley happily. Oh, are they? Good, said Cruella. Come here, dogs.
Pongo and Mrs. came forward politely.
Wouldn't they make enchanting fur coats, said Cruella to her husband. For spring wear, over a black suit. We never thought of making coats out of dog skins.
Pongo gave a sharp, menacing bark.
It was only a joke, dear Pongo, said Mrs. Dearley, patting him. Then she said to Cruella, I sometimes think they understand every word we say.
But she did not really think it. And it was true. That is, it was true of Pongo. Mrs. did not understand quite so many human words as he did. But she understood Cruella's joke and thought it a very bad one. As for Pongo, he was furious. What a thing to say in front of his wife when she was expecting her first puppies. He was glad to see Mrs. was not upset.
You must dine with us next Saturday, said Cruella to Mrs. Dearley.
And as Mrs. Dearley could not think of a good excuse, she was very truthful. She accepted. Then she said they must not keep the Devilles any longer. As they went through the hall, a most beautiful white Persian cat dashed past them and ran upstairs. Mrs. Dearley admired it.
I don't like her much, said Cruella. I'd drown her if she wasn't so valuable.
The cat turned on the stairs and made an angry spitting noise. It might have been at Pongo and Mrs., but then again, it might not.
I want you to hear my new motor horn, said Cruella as they all went down the front door steps. It's the loudest horn in England.
She pushed past the chauffeur and sounded the horn herself, making it last a long time. Pongo and Mrs. were nearly deafened.
Lovely, lovely dogs, Cruella said to them as she got into the striped black and white car. You'd go so well with my car and my black and white hair.
Then the chauffeur spread a sable rug over the Devilles' knees and drove the striped car away.
That car looks like a moving zebra crossing, said Mr. Dearley.
Was your friend's hair black and white when she was at school?
She was no friend of mine. I was scared of her, said Mrs. Dearley.
Yes, her hair was just the same. She had one white plait and one black.
Mr. Dearley thought how lucky he was to be married to Mrs. Dearley and not to Cruella de Vil. He felt sorry for her husband. Pongo and Mrs. felt sorry for her white cat. The golden sunset had gone now, and the blue twilight had come. The park was nearly empty, and a park keeper was calling, all out, in a faraway voice. There was a faint scent of hay from the sun-scorched lawns, and a weedy, watery smell from the lake. All the houses on the outer circle that had been turned into government offices were now closed for the night. No light shone in their windows. But the Dearleys could see welcoming lights in their own windows. And soon Pongo and Mrs. sniffed an exquisite smell of dinner. The Dearleys liked it too. They all paused to look down through the iron railings at the kitchen. Although it was in the basement, this was not at all a dark kitchen. It had a door and two large windows opening onto one of the narrow paved yards which are so often found in front of old London houses. The correct name for these little basement yards is the area. A narrow flight of steps led up from the area to the street. The Dearleys and the dogs thought how very nice their brightly lit kitchen looked. It had white walls, red linoleum, and a dresser on which was blue-spotted china. There was a new-fashioned electric stove for the cooking and an old-fashioned kitchen fire to keep the nannies happy. Nanny Cook was basting something in the oven, while Nanny Butler stacked plates on the lift, which would take them up through the dining room floor as if delivering the Demon King in a pantomime. Near the fire were two cushioned dog baskets, and already two superb dinners in shining bowls were waiting for Pongo and Mrs. "I hope we haven't tired, Mrs.," said Mr. Dearly, as he opened the front door with his latchkey. Mrs. would have liked to say she had never felt better in her life. As she could not speak, she tried to show how well she felt, and rushed down to the kitchen, lashing her tail. So did Pongo, looking forward to his dinner and a long firelit snooze beside his dear Mrs. "I wish we had tails to wag," said Mr. Dearly. Cruella de Vil's dinner party took place in a room with black marble walls on a white marble table. The food was rather unusual. The soup was dark purple, and what did it taste of? Pepper. The fish was bright green, and what did it taste of? Pepper. The meat was pale blue, and what did that taste of? Pepper. Everything tasted of pepper, even the ice cream, which was black. There were no other guests. After dinner, Mr. and Mrs. Dearly sat panting in the red marble drawing room, where an enormous fire was now burning. Mr. Deville panted quite a bit too. Cruella, who was wearing a ruby satin dress with ropes of emeralds, got as close to the fire as she could. "Make it blaze for me," she said to Mr. Deville. Mr. Deville made such a blaze that the Dearlys thought the chimney would catch fire. "Lovely! Lovely," said Cruella, clapping her hands with delight. "Ah, but the flames never last long enough." The minute they died down a little, she shivered and huddled herself in her absolutely simple white mink cloak. Mr. and Mrs. Dearly left as early as they felt was polite and walked along the outer circle trying to get cool. "What a strange name Deville is," said Mr. Dearly. "If you put the two words together, they make devil. Perhaps Cruella's a lady devil. Perhaps that's why she likes things so hot." Mrs. Dearly smiled, for she knew he was only joking. Then she said, "Oh dear, as we've dined with them, we must ask them to dine with us. And there are some other people we ought to ask. We'd better get it over before Mrs. has her puppies. Good gracious, what's that?" Something soft was rubbing against her ankles. "It's Cruella's cat," said Mr. Dearly. "Go home, cat. You'll get lost." But the cat followed them all the way to their house. "Perhaps she's hungry," said Mrs. Dearly. "Very probably, unless she likes pepper," said Mr. Dearly. He was still gulping the night air to cool his throat. "You stroke her while I get her some food," said Mrs. Dearly. And she went down the area steps and into the kitchen on tiptoe so as not to wake Pongo and Mrs., who were asleep in their baskets. Soon she came up with some milk and half a tin of sardines. The white cat accepted both, then began to walk down the area steps. "Does she want to live with us?" said Mrs. Dearly. It seemed as if the white cat did. But just then Pongo woke up and barked loudly. The white cat turned and walked away into the night. "Just as well," said Mr. Dearly. "Cruella would have the law on us if we took her valuable cat." Then they went down into the kitchen to receive the full force of Pongo's welcome. Mrs., though sleepy, was fairly formidable too. There was a whirling mass of humans and dogs on the kitchen hearthrug, until Mrs. Dearly remembered, far too late, that Mr. Dearly's dress suit would be covered with white hairs. It must have been about 3 weeks later that Mrs. began to behave in a very peculiar manner. She explored every inch of the house, paying particular attention to cupboards and boxes. And the place that interested her most was a large cupboard just outside the Dearly's bedroom. The nannies kept various buckets and brooms in this cupboard, and there wasn't a spare inch of space. Every time Mrs. managed to get in, she knocked something over with a clatter, and then looked very ill-treated. "Bless me, she wants to have her puppies there," said Nanny Cook. "Not in that dark, stuffy cupboard, Mrs. Love," said Nanny Butler. "You need light and air." But when Mrs. Dearly consulted the splendid veterinary surgeon, he said what Mrs. needed most was a small enclosed place where she would feel safe, And if she fancied the broom cupboard she'd better have. And she'd better have it at once and get used to it, even though the puppies were not expected for some days. So out came the brooms and buckets, and in went Mrs., to her great satisfaction. Pongo was a little hurt that he was not allowed to go with her, but Mrs. explained to him that mother dogs like to be by themselves when puppies are expected. So he licked his wife's ear tenderly and said he quite understood. "I hope the dinner party won't upset, Mrs.," said Mr. Dearly, when he came home and found Mrs. settled in the cupboard. "I shall be glad when it's over." It was to be that very night. As there were quite a lot of guests, the food had to be normal. But Mrs. Dearly kindly put tall pepper grinders in front of the Devilles. Cruella ground so much pepper that most of the guests were sneezing. But Mr. Deville used no pepper at all, and he ate much more than in his own house. Cruella was busy peppering her fruit salad when Nanny Butler came in and whispered to Mrs. Dearly. Mrs. Dearly looked startled, asked the guests to excuse her, and hurried out. A few minutes later, Nanny Butler came in again and whispered to Mr. Dearly. He looked startled, excused himself, and hurried out. Those guests who were not sneezing made polite conversation. Then Nanny Butler came in again. "Ladies and gentlemen," she said dramatically, "puppies are arriving earlier than expected. Mr. and Mrs. Dearly ask you to remember that Mrs. has never before been a mother. She needs absolute quiet." There was an instant silence, broken only by a stifled sneeze. Then the guests rose, drank a whispered toast to the young mother, and tiptoed from the house. All except Cruella de Vil. When she reached the hall, she went straight to Nanny Butler, who was seeing the guests out, and demanded, "Where are those puppies?" Nanny Butler had no intention of telling, but Cruella heard the Dearlys' voices and ran upstairs. This time she was wearing a black satin dress with ropes of pearls, but the same absolutely simple white mink cloak. She had kept it round her all through dinner, although the room was very warm and the pepper very hot.
I must see the darling puppies," she cried.
The cupboard door was a little open. The Dearlys were inside soothing Mrs. Three puppies had been born before Nanny Butler, on bringing Mrs. a nourishing chicken dinner, had discovered what was happening. Cruella flung open the door and stared down at the three puppies.
"But they're mongrels, all white, no spots at all," she cried. "You must drown them at once."
"Dalmatians are always born white," said Mr. Dearly, glaring at Cruella. "The spots come later."
"And we wouldn't drown them even if they were mongrels," said Mrs. Dearly indignantly.
"It'd be quite easy," said Cruella. "I've drowned dozens and dozens of my cat's kittens. She always chooses some wretched alley cat for their father, so they're never worth keeping."
"Surely you leave her one kitten," said Mrs. Dearly.
"If I'd done that, I'd be overrun with cats," said Cruella. "Are you sure those horrid little white rats are pure Dalmatian puppies?"
"Quite sure," snapped Mr. Dearly. "Now, please go away. You're upsetting Mrs." And indeed, Mrs. was upset. Even with the Dearlys there to protect her and her puppies, she was a little afraid of this tall woman with black and white hair who stared so hard. And the poor cat who had lost all those kittens. Never, never would Mrs. forget that. And one day she was to be glad that she remembered it.
"How long will it be before the puppies are old enough to leave their mother?" asked Cruella. "In case I want to buy some."
7 or 8 weeks, said Mr. Dearly, "but there won't be any for sale." Then he shut the cupboard door in Cruella's face, and Nanny Butler firmly showed her out of the house. Nanny Cook was busy telephoning the splendid vet, but he was out on another case. His wife said she would tell him as soon as he came home, but there was no need to worry. It sounded as if Mrs. was getting on very well. She certainly was. There was now a fourth puppy. Mrs. washed it, and then Mr. Dearly dried it, while Mrs. Dearly gave Mrs. a drink of warm milk. Then the pup was put with the other three in a basket placed where Mrs. could see it. Soon she had a fifth puppy, then a sixth, and a seventh. The night wore on. 8 puppies? 9 puppies? Surely that would be all. Dalmatians do not often have more in their first family.
10 puppies! 11 puppies!
Then the 12th arrived, and it did not look like its brothers and sisters. The flesh showing through its white hair was not a healthy pink, but a sickly yellow. And instead of kicking its little legs, it lay quite still. The nannies, who were sitting just outside the cupboard, told Mr. and Mrs. Dearley that it had been born dead.
"But with so many, its mother will never miss it," said Nanny Cook comfortingly.
Mr. Dearley held the tiny creature in the palm of his hand and looked at it sorrowfully. "It isn't fair. It should have no life at all," said Mrs. Dearley with tears in her eyes. Something he had once read came back to Mr. Dearley. He began to massage the puppy. Then he tousled it gently in a towel. And suddenly there was a faint hint of pink around its nose. And then its whole little body was flushed with pink beneath its snowy hair. Its legs moved. Its mouth opened. It was alive. Mr. Dearley quickly put it close to Mrs. so that she could give it some milk at once. And it stayed there feeding until the next puppy arrived, for arrive it did. That made 13. Shortly before dawn, the front doorbell rang. It was the splendid vet, who had been up all night saving the life of a dog that had been run over. By then, all the puppies had been born, and Mrs. was giving breakfast to 8 of them, all she could manage at one time.
"Excellent," said the splendid vet. "A really magnificent family. And how is the father bearing up?"
The Dearleys felt guilty. They had not given Pongo a thought since the puppies had begun to arrive. He'd been shut up in the kitchen. All night long he had paced backwards and forwards, and only once had he heard any news when Nanny Cook had come down to make coffee and sandwiches. She had told him that Mrs. was doing well, but only as a joke, for she'd no idea he would understand.
"Poor Pongo! We must have him up," said Mrs. Dearley.
But the splendid vet said mother dogs did not usually like to have father dogs around when puppies had just been born. At that moment, there was a clatter of toenails on the polished floor of the hall, and upstairs, 4 at a time, came Pongo. Nanny Cook had just gone down to make some tea for the splendid vet, and the anxious father had streaked past her the minute she opened the kitchen door.
"Careful, Pongo," said the splendid vet. "She may not want you."
But Mrs. was weakly thumping her tail.
"Go down and have your breakfast and a good sleep," she said.
But nobody except Pongo heard a sound. His eyes and his wildly wagging tail told her all he was feeling, his love for her and those 8 fine pups enjoying their first breakfast, and those others in the basket waiting their turn. How many were there?
"It's a pity dogs can't count," said Mrs. Dearley.
But Pongo could count perfectly. He went downstairs with his head high and a new light in his fine dark eyes, for he knew himself to be the proud father of 15.
"And now," said the splendid vet to the Dearleys, "you must get a foster mother."
He explained that though Mrs. would do her best to feed 15 puppies, doing so would make her terribly thin and tired. And the strong puppies would get more milk than the weak ones. The puppy Mr. Dearley had brought to life was very small and would need special care. The largest pup of all had a black patch all over its ear and one side of its face. This is a bad fault in a Dalmatian, which should be born pure white, as Mr. Dearley had told Cruella de Vil. Some people would have drowned this patched pup because it would never be valuable, but the Dearleys felt particularly fond of it, because it had started life with a bit of bad luck, and they liked being able to recognize it. Until the spots started to come through some weeks later, the big puppy with the patch and the small delicate puppy were the only ones who could be told apart from the others. The splendid vet said the foster mother would have to be some poor dog who had lost her own puppies but still had milk to give. He thought he could get such a dog, but as he wasn't sure, the Dearleys had better telephone all the lost dogs' homes. And until the foster mother was found, they could help Mrs. by feeding the pups with a doll's feeding bottle or an old-fashioned fountain pen filler. Then the splendid vet went home for an hour's sleep before starting his day's work. Nanny Cook got breakfast, and Nanny Butler took Pongo for a run, and Mrs. was persuaded to leave her family for a few minutes' walk. When she came back, Mrs. Dearly had tidied the cupboard. Mrs. gave the second lot of pups a meal, and then she and her family of 15 had a glorious sleep. And Pongo, down in the kitchen, had a glorious sleep too, knowing that all was well. As soon as the shops opened, Mrs. Dearly went out and bought a doll's feeding bottle and a fountain pen filler. And then Mr. Dearly and the nannies took turns at feeding puppies. Mrs. Dearly fancied this job herself, but was busy telephoning, trying to find a foster mother. The nannies were too fat to be comfortable in the cupboard, so soon Mr. Dearly got the feeding job all to himself, and became very good at it, and just a bit bossy. Of course, he couldn't go to business, which was awkward, as he had an important business deal on. Luckily, there was a telephone in the Dearly's bedroom, and it had a long cord to it, so Mr. Dearly was able to telephone while he was feeding the pups. There he was, in a dark cupboard, with Mrs., 15 puppies, and the telephone. He nearly upset his important business deal by holding a pup to his ear and giving the telephone a drink of milk. No sooner had Mr. Dearly put the telephone down than the splendid vet rang up to say he'd not been able to find a foster mother. Neither had Mrs. Dearly anywhere in London. She now started to ring up lost dogs' homes outside London. It was late afternoon before she heard of a mother dog with some milk to give, nearly 30 miles from London. And this dog had only just been brought in, and would have to be kept some days, in case she was claimed. Mr. Dearly put his head out of the cupboard. After being up all night and feeding pups all day, he was beginning to feel pretty tired, but he was determined to go on helping Mrs. until the foster mother arrived. "Why not go and see if you can borrow that dog?" he said. "Say we'll give it back if its owner turns up." So Mrs. Dearly got the car from the old stable at the back of the house and drove off hopefully. But when she got to the dog's home, she found that the mother dog had already been claimed. She was glad for the dog's sake, but terribly disappointed. She thought of poor Mrs. getting exhausted by too many puppies, and of Mr. Dearly, who might easily refuse to come out of the cupboard for a good night's sleep. And she began to think she never would find a foster mother. It was now almost dark, a gloomy, wet October evening. It had been raining all afternoon, but Mrs. Dearly hadn't minded when she was feeling hopeful. Now, as she started back for London, the weather made her feel more and more depressed, and the rain got so heavy that the windscreen wiper could hardly keep pace with it. She was driving across a lonely stretch of common when she saw what looked like a bundle lying in the road ahead of her. She slowed down, and as she drew closer, she saw that it was not a bundle, but a dog. Instantly, she thought it must have been run over. Dreading what she might find, she stopped the car and got out. At first, she thought the dog was dead, but as she bent down, it struggled to its feet, showing no signs of injury. It was so plastered with mud that she could not see what kind of dog it was. What she could see, by the light from the car's headlights, was the poor creature's pitiful thinness. She spoke to it gently. Its drooping tail gave a feeble flick, then dropped again. "I can't leave it here," thought Mrs. Dearly. "Even if it hasn't been run over, it must be near starvation. Oh, dear." With 17 dogs at home already, she had no wish to take back a stray, but she knew she would never bring herself just to hand this poor thing in at a police station. She patted it and tried to get it to follow her. It was willing to, but its legs were so wobbly that she picked it up and carried it. It felt like a sack of bones. And as she noticed this, she also noticed something else. Hurriedly, she laid the dog on the seat of the car on a rug and turned on the light. Then she saw that this was a mother dog, and that in spite of its starving condition, it still had some milk to give. She sprang into the car and drove as fast as she safely could. Quite soon, she was in the London suburbs. She knew it would still take her some time to get home because of the traffic, so she stopped at a little restaurant. Here the owner let her buy some milk and some cold meat, and lent her his own dog's dishes. The starving dog ate and drank ravenously, then at once settled to sleep. The nice owner of the restaurant took back his dishes and wished Mrs. Dearly luck as she drove away. She got home just as the splendid vet was arriving to see Mrs. and the puppies. He carried the stray dog in and down to the warm kitchen. After a careful examination, he said he thought her thinness was due more to having had puppies than to long starvation, and that if she was fed well, the milk intended for her own puppies might continue. He guessed that they'd been taken away from her, and she'd got lost looking for them. "She ought to have a bath," said Nanny Cook, "or she'll give our puppies fleas." The splendid vet said a bath was a good idea, so the dog was carried into a little room which had been fitted up as a laundry. Nanny Cook got on with the bath as fast as she could, because she was afraid Mr. Dearly might want to do the job himself. Mrs. Dearly had gone upstairs to tell him what was happening. The stray seemed delighted with the warm water. She had just been covered with soap when Pongo came back from a walk with Nanny Butler and ran through the open door of the laundry.
"He won't hurt a lady," said the splendid vet.
"I should hope not, when she's going to help nurse his puppies," said Nanny Cook.
Pongo stood on his hind legs and kissed the wet dog on the nose, telling her how glad he was to see her and how grateful his wife would be. But no human hurt him. The stray said,
"Well, I'll do my best, but I can't promise anything."
No human heard that either.
Just then, Mr. Dearly came hurrying in to see the new arrival.
"What kind of a dog is she?" he asked. At that moment, Nanny Cook began to rinse off the soap, and everyone gave a gasp. This dog was a Dalmatian too. But her spots, instead of being black, were brown, which in Dalmatians is called not brown, but liver.
18 Dalmatians under one roof," said Mr. Dearly gloatingly. "Couldn't be better."
But it could, as he was one day to learn. Wet, the poor liver-spotted dog looked thinner than ever.
"We'll call her Perdita,"
said Mrs. Dearly, and explained to the nannies that this was after a character in Shakespeare. "She was lost, and the Latin word for lost is perditus." Then she patted Pongo, who was looking particularly intelligent, and said anyone would think he understood. And indeed he did. For though he had very little Latin beyond cavi canem, he had, as a young dog, devoured Shakespeare in a tasty leather binding. Perdita was dried in front of the kitchen fire and given another meal. The splendid vet said she ought to start mothering puppies as soon as possible to encourage her to provide more milk. So, after she was quite dry and had taken a nap, two puppies were removed from the cupboard while Mrs. went out for a little air. The splendid vet said she would not know they had gone, which is possible, as she could not count as well as Pongo could, but she knew all about those puppies going, because Pongo had told her, and she had sent polite messages to Perdita. Mrs. felt a bit unhappy about giving any puppies up, but she knew it was for their good. Before leaving, the splendid vet warned the Dearlys that if Perdita could not feed the puppies, they must not be returned to Mrs., for her sense of smell would tell her that they had been with some other dog, and she might turn against them. And this does happen with some dogs. It would never have happened with Mrs., but it will already have been seen that she and Pongo were rather unusual dogs. And so was Perdita. And so, if people only realized it, are many dogs. In fact, usual dogs are really more unusual than unusual dogs. Anyway, Perdita was able to feed the two puppies. Pongo went upstairs and told Mrs. so, though to the Dearlys it only sounded like the thumping of his tail. Then he said good night and went back to the kitchen, where his basket was ready for him. Perdita had the basket Mrs. usually slept in. She had fed and washed the two puppies and was now having a light supper. The splendid vet had said she must eat all she possibly could to get her strength back. Pongo had a snack himself, to encourage her. Then the nannies went to bed, and the kitchen was left in darkness, except for the glow from the fire. And when the two puppies were asleep, Perdita told Pongo her story. She had been born in a large country house, not far from the common where Mrs. Dearly had found her. Although very pretty, she had been less valuable than her brothers and sisters. Her spots were rather small, and her tail inclined to curl. It had straightened as she grew older. As no one rich or important wanted to be her pet, she was given to a farmer, who, though not cruel to her, never gave her the love all Dalmatians need. And he let her run wild, which is not good for any kind of dog. A time came when she felt a great desire to marry. But no marriage was arranged for her, and as the farm was over a mile from any village, no dog had come courting her. So one day she set out to find a husband for herself. Her way to the village lay across the common, where she saw a large, handsome car which had been driven onto the grass. A group of people were having a picnic, and with them was a superb, liver-spotted Dalmatian. Now, liver-spotted Dalmatians are unusual. Perdita had been the only one in her family, and always thought herself a freak. She instantly knew that the dog on the common was no freak, but a most valuable animal, for he wore a magnificent collar, and was being offered a piece of chicken by a richly dressed lady. At that moment, he saw Perdita. It was love at first sight. Without even bothering to eat the chicken, he came bounding to her, and they were away into a wood together before anyone could stop them. Here they made swift arrangements for their marriage, promising to love each other always. Then the happy husband told his wife she must, of course, come and live with him, and led her back to the common. But as they reached it, along came the farmer Perdita lived with in his rattling old car. He dragged her into it, and the picnic party bundled her husband into their car. Both dogs struggled and howled, but it was useless. The cars drove off in opposite directions. 9 weeks after her marriage, Perdita had 8 puppies. The farmer did not give her extra food or help to feed the puppies himself, so she got thinner and thinner. By the time her family was a month old, she was just skin and bone. Then the farmer put down some food for the puppies to eat, and they quickly learned how to. But they still went on taking all the milk Perdita could give them, so she never had a chance to regain her weight. She was such a very young mother, barely full grown herself, but she loved her babies dearly and did all she could for them. And as she got thinner, they got fatter. The spots on Dalmatians begin to come through after 2 weeks. By the time Perdita's family were 6 weeks old, it was obvious they were going to be beautifully marked and very valuable. Perdita heard the farmer say so to a stranger who came to the farm one morning. She was still helping to feed them. They would eat all the farmer offered and then come to her for milk. Then she and they would all have a happy sleep in the old box she'd been given for a bed. One afternoon, she awoke to find not one puppy in bed with her. She searched the farmhouse. She searched the farmyard. No puppies anywhere. She ran onto the road, fearing they might have been run over. On and on she went, pausing every few minutes to bark. No answering puppy bark came to her. Soon it began to rain. She thought of the puppies all getting wet and barked more and more desperately. A car nearly ran over her. She only saved herself by jumping into a muddy ditch, where the mud even got into her eyes and ears. By the time she reached the common where she had met her husband, she was shivering and weak on her legs. The thought of her lost husband added to her misery at the loss of the puppies. She had eaten nothing since the previous afternoon. The farmer only gave her one meal a day. At last, faint with hunger and utterly broken-spirited, she collapsed. And there, not long after, Mrs. Dearly found her. That was Perdita's whole story, except that she never told Pongo that the farmer had named her Spotty, because she liked Perdita so much better. Pongo sympathized with all his heart and did his best to comfort her. He said he did not think the puppies were lost. It was more likely that they'd been sold, perhaps to the stranger who came to see them. And this might be the best thing that could have happened to them, for if they were valuable, they were sure to be well taken care of. There would never have been enough food at the farm for them when they got really big. Perdita knew all this was true, and the two tiny puppies in the basket with her were wonderfully comforting. So were the kind things Pongo said about being grateful to her for feeding them. Soon she felt much happier and slid into a warm, well-fed sleep. Pongo lay awake for a long time, wishing Mrs. and all the puppies could have been with him in the firelit kitchen. He strolled over and looked at the two puppies asleep with Perdita, and felt proud and protective, and extremely sorry for Perdita. Really, she was a very pretty girl, if not a patch on his missus. Then he went back to his basket, had a last wash, and settled down. The fire sank lower. Soon the kitchen was lit only by a faint light from a street lamp on the outer circle. Pongo slept. Perdita slept. And the two puppies, who had come successfully through their first day in the world, slept as peacefully as if they'd been with their own mother. Up in the cupboard, Mrs. had just served supper for 8 and was a trifle tired. Mr. Dearley had just served supper for 5 and was so exhausted by his day of puppy feeding that he had to crawl out of the cupboard on his hands and knees. Mrs. Dearley got him to bed and fed him with hot milk from a thermos. They slept with their door open in case Mrs. needed anything, but she was very peaceful, though just before she fell asleep, she did wonder a little about the strange female down in the kitchen with Pongo. She didn't worry exactly. She just wondered. On the top floor, Nanny Cook slept dreaming of Dalmatian puppies dressed as babies, and Nanny Butler slept dreaming of babies dressed as Dalmatian puppies. What with 4 humans, 3 dogs, and 15 puppies, it really was a very sleepful house.